Do you like movies, comic books, science fiction, and more? Then you've come to the right place. This is the Rebel Radio Podcast. You can find us at therebelradiopodcast.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and join our Patreon for just $2 a month where you get exclusive episodes. Thank you for listening and enjoy the show. Episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long, the ranch hand. I don't know.
Hey.
Yeah.
Could be. You know, you're getting the long hair going look, you know, underneath the cowboy hat.
I thought you'd say like the outlaw, you know? Outlaw Long. You know, like Outlaw Dave, but Outlaw Long, you know?
Does Long even know who Outlaw Dave is?
Nope.
Oh. Yeah. I didn't see Long listen to.
I know who Dirty Dan is.
Long Dirty. Just strike me as listening to Rock 101 in the 1990s.
Yeah.
No, I was listening to the Buzz during the 90s.
Nice.
Yeah.
I loved it.
When they played a lot of interesting, different music back in the day before Clear Channel took over.
Mm-hmm.
Because they used to have Friday night metal nights.
Yep. Mandatory Metallica.
Radio sucks. I mean, Matt, I know Matt doesn't remember. Do you remember Z-Rock Long?
Is that the Conroe station?
No, Z-Rock was on 106.9, which is classic rock now. But Z-Rock was, I mean, you're talking Pantera, Metallica, metal bands. I mean, it was a hell of a good station.
There was the one station that played a lot of modern music, 106.5, I believe, that came out in the late 90s.
Yeah.
And then they were kind of trying to compete with the Buzz. And then the one time, I remember that day, they spent there was one day, airing day, that killed the radio station. And it was when Alanis Morissette released her second hit song from her new album, not Jagged Little Pill, but they played the song and they played it like for a full hour, and you know, and they kept talking how great it was, they kept playing that song, and then right then and there, the day after that, they just the station went broke because that's all they did was play that one Alanis Morissette song. And then now it's a Tejano station.
local radio is nowadays, but you know, I mean, some of that is just the way the internet has changed the
music
game and things, and
Rock 101,
satellite radio,
satellite internet, and things.
Rock 101 was also taken over by a Tejano station, is now Mega 101.
Well, 106.9 is essentially what Rock 101 used to be, only it's classic rock now. You know,
a lot. I was listening when that happened. Me and my dad were listening to Walton and Johnson in the morning, and then they had to cut away really quick for an unexpected break. And then a rerun started coming on because this was like 2005, and they were talking about how Roger Clemens had just signed on with the Astros.
That long.
Yeah. Yeah. And then all of a sudden Tejano music started playing.
I'd have to look that up. I don't think it's been going 15 years.
Or no.
That seems a little too long.
It's 2004, 2003, I think, is whenever they cut out.
And the Buzz is just a terrible, terrible station.
Yeah. Yeah, man. The music scene, we'll say it's been getting mainstreamed, you know.
Yeah. But it is what it is. I mean, you know, but then there's new entertainment. Like 10 years ago, you know, when podcasts were kind of a new thing, nobody was listening. Now look at us. We're entertaining people with our podcasts.
Here we go.
Or so we hope.
Are you not entertained?
Yeah, you just had to make that joke because you're doing a Russell Crowe movie.
That's right.
I was trying to avoid that.
Low-hanging fruit, you know.
You got to stay away from the easy shots. You got to be more creative than that.
Okay.
So how are you guys doing? Good week?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was okay.
Yeah.
Like the last half of the week, I was getting micromanaged a bit by some supervisors.
Hmm.
And I'm like,
always fun.
Stop writing me, man. Don't y'all trust what I'm doing?
That's just one way to break an employee's spirit, man, just to micromanage them and make them keep looking over their shoulder.
Yeah. But whatever. It happens once every quarter.
Once every quarter.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably because you're growing your hair out. They're like, man, you're starting to look very suspicious.
Yeah.
Could be.
Yeah.
Yeah, my week was okay. Wyatt is playing baseball, so it's been very busy. Had his first game. That was a lot of fun. And I was able to get microchipped today, as all the conspiracy theorists will have you believe.
I was wondering. I was driving by your neighborhood, and a hotspot came up. I was wondering what that was. That was it.
I mean, I'm just going to say this. You know, I understand people might have reservations about the vaccine. Like, I know, Matt, you've got some reservations about it. And I'm not calling you out. I'm just using you as an example. But to think that the government is microchipping you and doing stuff that extreme, it just shows there's a lot of stupid fucking people in this world. It's just like, there's people that truly, truly fucking believe that. And it just blows my mind that people are that fucking naive.
Yeah. And,
I don't want the government tracking my personal debt.
And I completely
in my minimum wage job.
I completely understand that. And this has nothing to do with current politics or Trump. You could go back the last 30 years of government. And I understand why people sometimes don't have faith in it. You know, that I get that. But to think that they're going to that extremes and all that, I mean, they don't give a shit about Joe Blow that goes to work every day like most of us. As long as we're paying our taxes and doing our job, that's all they care about. They're not looking to see what you're doing every day. You're not a criminal, you know, and trust me, if they want to know what Matt or Long or I are doing every day, they can find out anyways. You know? So it's just like, it's just the ridiculousness of it, that the things that people have come up with in the last year and a half since COVID hit. It just blows my mind, you know, that people think these things, and it just helps me realize that I'm pretty normal.
I mean, the only reason why is because rather than because most of these things people believe easily because it's a Facebook post or some idiot on YouTube was trending.
Oh, I agree.
And people listen. Yeah. And they can refute all that by doing basic research and finding out how it works at a basic level. Yeah. And then they'll understand, okay. So that's why this is like conspiracy theorist bullshit. They didn't bother researching it. It
goes back to you know? Saying, don't believe everything you read or are told, you know, but it is, you know, it's a sense of relief to have the vaccine, you know, so I'm glad it got done today, and it was just kind of on the fly. I got lucky. So, and I hope, you know,
right place, right time.
Yeah. I mean, that's honestly what it was. And, you know, arm's a little sore and I'm a little tired from it, but you know what? I'll take that. It beats the alternative. And well, let's get into today's show then. Download this, which is going to be seriously lacking for me this week. Because honestly, other than Wednesday night and tonight, I haven't been home with baseball practice and games. And I spent Wednesday night watching the movie that we're doing today. So, I guess I'll start it. And honestly, about the only thing I've really watched this week is I did sit down last weekend. Wyatt wanted to watch Ghostbusters for his birthday, so I sat down and watched it with him and enjoyed it and laughed. And it's amazing how he knows lines for the movie, but I'm watching it with him. There's a part where Ray or somebody says, "You're an asshole," and then Wyatt repeated it. And I'm like, "No, you can't repeat that word." it was a little bit funny. But, you know, but that's about all I've watched this week, really. I mean, I just haven't had time, but definitely looking forward to next week with Falcon Winter Soldier coming out, and we'll definitely watch that before we record next week, the first episode. And that's it, man. I slacked off on Download this week.
Nice. I did buy Monster Hunter.
No.
I watched it, and it's I mean,
did you buy it or rent it?
I rented it. Sorry, rented it.
Yeah, I'm hoping it's been $20.
No.
Oh my god.
Definitely not. I mean, I like Mila Jovovich, but lately she's been in those movies where you just kind of watch it once. You take it for what it is, you know. It's your typical, you know, Mila Jovovich stuff. She's flipping around, she's killing shit, blowing the shit out of stuff. She looks great. Tony Jaa's in it. Ron Perlman's in it. You know, by the trailer, you can see basically what happens. You know, they get transported into another dimensions, and oh crap, there's these friggin' monsters. Looked like the Zerg.
Roman's kind of fallen into the B movie category too, since unless he works with Guillermo del Toro, that's kind of what he gets stuck doing.
Yeah, and then there's like a cat. There's like a CGI big cat chef thing. It's weird. I mean, the ending of the movie's weird, but you know, the first half is pretty cool and pretty consistent. You know, I give it like a C+. You know, entertaining.
How are the special effects?
Special effects are surprisingly good. They look, it's like a better Starship Troopers, I guess, but they're, you know, that not the same kind of themes, but fighting the same looking monsters. They're like spider looking monsters, giant bugs and stuff. At the end, there's a dragon that they have to fight. And it all looks pretty good. It doesn't look cheesy, you know, or anything like that. Action is pretty solid. Nothing spectacular though. But yeah, definitely worth the $5, I would say, if you're looking to see something.
Get naked.
Yeah, she doesn't get naked, unfortunately.
Yeah. There's nothing to look at.
We all know, we've seen Fifth Element. We know what's there.
Yeah. Yeah. Something.
My sister, you know, she wanted to see Raya the Last and the Last Dragon. And, you know, I know I said that I felt like it was better than Moana. And I wasn't sure after I'd said that. I was like, maybe it is. And then my wife was like, no, I feel like it is. And I was like, I feel like I have to watch it again. I have to watch it again before I make that decision. But there's a lot of without getting too much away, there's a lot of the same elements. You have a female of destiny. You have encroaching darkness. You have a mythical, hero, you know, sidekick thing in there. And
a lot of martial arts in it.
A lot of martial arts. Yeah, there's a lot of fighting. And there is some sad, there's some genuinely sad parts. I don't think it's as like, you know, heart tugging as Onward. I think Onward's like one of the best Disney movies right now. Just because of, you know, I felt like it, you know,
Soul's way better than Onward.
You think Soul's way better?
Recent Disney Pixar films. Yeah.
It's definitely up there. I wouldn't put it, you know, much farther down from Onward. But, you know, those are definitely top, like all of these that we're talking about right now are definitely top five, arguably top five Disney films. But it's a really good film. I split it, you know, I did feel like $30 was a bit much. But then
is it better than Mulan?
Yes, it is way better than the live action Mulan. Way better.
Okay.
I would
is it as good as the animated Mulan?
I would say the action, yes. The songs are the part that I feel is lacking. Moana has better songs. Mulan has better songs. I feel like these haven't really grown on me. Maybe if I watch them again, you know, I might feel different. But I feel like as far as the story, the lore, and the action, you know, it's top notch in those three categories.
My favorite song from Moana is the scene with the giant crab.
Yes, me too. How did you get so crabulous? Are you trying to get me to talk about myself?
Yeah.
But
I haven't memorized the lyrics like you did. Oh, yeah. But yeah, I still like it.
I do, yes. don't get me started. I'll just start talking, quoting the whole movie. We'll have a quote along.
I sing Moana's song in the shower, but don't tell anybody that.
So Raya was good. Good. What's your grade?
Oh, it's an A.
Oh, okay.
A, maybe an A+. I'm not ready to give it an A+.
Wow.
I'd say it's an A though for sure. Very, very good. Yeah. It's hard to get an A+. I feel like it has to have everything, and I feel like the songs just have to be more catchy. If I'm like, man, this is an A+ Disney film, you know, Moana does that. Moana has all of what I just talked about and more. It has the lore, the, you know, everything.
As popular as Frozen is, I think Moana's songs are better.
Yes. Yeah. Let It Go is great, but that's it. That's all they have is Let It Go. Yeah.
I think the songs in Frozen 2 are a little better than some of the songs in Frozen 1, and 2 doesn't get enough credit for the songs.
I still haven't seen 2. I need to see Frozen 2. That's something that
2 was kind of
a little bit dark.
Mess to me.
Yeah. I kind of like 2 because it's a little bit darker though.
Yeah.
I did watch 2 Godzilla films.
Oh, okay. Let's get into real shit right now.
Yeah.
No.
I watched Tokyo SOS.
Between you guys texting and the movies you watch, do y'all work?
I definitely played a lot of hooky this week because I knew that this was the last week that I was going to be able to kind of take advantage of that. Now I'm going to be in an office all day, pretty much. Not going to be able to take advantage of like home office time like I am now. So I watched Tokyo SOS, and it basically is, another extension of Mothra. The human storyline is just kind of there to be there.
It's not as good as the Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla one before it.
It does what it's supposed to do. It sets up for monster fights, badass monster fights with awesome. Mothra looks awesome. I mean, just majestic. I mean, the best I've seen Mothra look. The Godzilla blasts are even better. The graphics continue to get better. That's one thing I can say about these movies. I feel like, and then the girls are prettier. The Mothra,
twins.
They're way prettier. So
yeah,
It was definitely an entertaining film. I think, I think it's maybe probably not as good as All Monsters Attack. But definitely entertaining, and I'm surprised that they were like, okay, this is the last one, and they just keep finding ways to make these films, or at least they did. Final Wars was like a friggin' trip. I mean, in the beginning they're like fighting Godzilla, and then they're like, we created the special forces,
dude. And I knew you're an MMA fan. So I kept my mouth shut on Don Fry being in that movie.
The general?
Yeah. He's that gruff voice,
Turn around. Keep going down. But we're going to fall apart. Keep going, you bastards. And then they're like,
there's only two things you don't understand about the two toughest things on Earth. That's me and Godzilla.
Yes. It's like, they are. And then the fighting, and it's just the commercial. They're like, we found superhumans somewhere in the earth. And then we put them in these cool uniforms. But the fights are badass. I mean, the graphics are, again, great. Even though you have this. And then the doctor, like, all of a sudden turning evil in the middle of the stair steps, and they're, like, talking. I don't know. That was pretty funny.
Turning alien. Yeah.
Of course. And,
Did you see the fight between rubber suited Godzilla versus 98 Broderick Godzilla?
Yes, that was that was funny, but still, like, I mean, the beams, the explosions, the atomic breath, all of that has they continue to grow, which I think that's what they focused on. Like, it maybe kind of did the whole George Lucas thing from the sequels or the prequels, where they're like, let's have all these cool special effects, or let's not worry too much about the storyline or the costumes too much, but let's focus on these graphics. And a lot of things turned out good aesthetically. Watching the movie, it's pretty nice, compared to some of the older ones. So I feel like I am more entertained by the cheesier ones. I'm getting like the kind of getting this like 80s cheesy action film stuff running. It's not like the best, but it's very entertaining. So next on my list, I believe I think there's one more DVD attached to that that Final Wars DVD that you gave me. And I think I watched that, and then I watched Shin Godzilla, and I think that will catch me up to the present Godzilla movies.
Yeah.
But man, it's been crazy.
Definitely. definitely watch Shin Godzilla dubbed. You know? Yeah, and it's basically, keep in mind also that this movie, Shin Godzilla, is its own continuity. There's no sequel to the original. It's its own thing.
Okay.
So you don't have to, yeah. So it's basically what happens if Godzilla appears in modern Japan.
Okay.
You know, so that's the premise. So today's modern Japan.
Nice. Yeah. And then lastly, I watched Sudden Impact, Dirty Harry, the third Dirty Harry film. And that's the one where they don't like that he's breaking stuff. He uses a car to take out two thieves or two.
Wait a minute. I thought Magnum Force was the third one.
Magnum Force is the second.
Was it?
Mm-hmm. Magnum Force and then Sudden Impact, then The Enforcer.
No, The Enforcer was second.
The Enforcer was 1983. Double check, but yeah. I guarantee you, Enforcer is 1983. That was the fourth and final film at the time. Then, you know, of course, he signs a deal with, I think it was Warner Brothers. Oh,
yeah, you're right.
Yeah, it was Warner Brothers, and then that's whenever they
hated it when you're right.
The Deadpool.
76.
Well,
I hate it when you're right.
I had the advantage of trying to see which one was the next film.
So, I can't stand it when you're right.
No, Impact was 83.
Oh, Sudden Impact was 83.
And then Deadpool was the 88. Deadpool wasn't very good.
No, it wasn't. You just had like more notable characters. I mean, Jim Carrey's in there, Liam Neeson's in there, and I think there's somebody else. I think Ozzy Osbourne may make a cameo, or they mention him or something like that. I don't know. But yeah, that one is like a. What does he say? Hey, there's some funny line that he uses throughout that film. You're shit out of luck. He says it like five times. You're shit out of luck. You know, and that snarly snake skin looking face of his, you know. But yeah, I mean, that was a good one. I mean, you know, IMDb or Tomato Meter rates it like a C. Definitely not as good as the first one or Magnum Force, but decent Dirty Harry film. It's basically when they're trying to weed out the Neanderthals. They're trying to put more women in the force, and he has to start interviewing potential candidates, and he starts asking her hypothetical questions, and they don't like him because they're like what a hard-nosed cop would ask. So, but the girl that he interrogates why she wants to be an inspector, you know, she ends up being his partner, and they have to go find these criminals. And I think she I forget what if she dies or not. That's the thing about watching
TV. She dies.
I think she dies. Yeah.
She dies. Yeah, she does. So yeah, are you done?
Yeah, that's it. That's all okay. Mine for me.
All right, I have one download this, and I actually read a digital comic I bought.
Oh, cool.
From Comixology, which, by the way, Mark, it also gives you a discount, an extra discount for comic book sales. And there's a flat discount, I think 10% for every comic book you buy if you have an unlimited account as well. So, digital comic, at least. Anyways, so I spent some money and actually bought Wonder Woman Dead Earth,
ooh,
a Black Label title. And I did a screenshot of one of the covers of Wonder. It's basically Wonder Woman meets Mad Max. It's a mashup of the genres. And it's a post-apocalyptic world. And Diana wakes up in this hellscape of Earth. And she's trying to figure out, okay, what happened and why are there giant monsters attacking the last of humanity? And it's basically up to her trying to protect the last bastion of humankind against extinction. And yeah, it's pretty gory. Mm-hmm. pretty gory. It's very well illustrated. And She uses Superman's skull and spine as a mace.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, I sent the picture of it through group chat.
I didn't know that was Superman's spine. And
yeah. Yeah. That's
badass.
But but I highly recommend it. It's a brisk read. And Wonder Woman Dead Earth. So. And that's that for my download this.
Nice.
Cool. Let's get into today's feature film then, I guess. A remake of a film from 1957, which is a classic in its own right. And in 2007, they released this version of it, directed by James Mangold, and was originally going to star Tom Cruise and Eric Bana were originally going to star in this film, but they both backed out and got busy with other projects. And then Russell Crowe's agent got a hold of the film, and it ended up getting made through the power of Russell Crowe's popularity at the time. It's really why this movie got made. And that is 3:10 to Yuma, starring Russell Crowe and Christian Bale. And Ben Foster is a brilliant co-star in this film. I guess I'll summarize since I'm talking. And I think Long summarized last week. And
the last 2 weeks. Thank you very much. And,
basically, it's a pretty straightforward film. There's a rancher named Dan Evans who he's struggling with some local guys who are trying to build railroads and bring railroads into Bisbee by buying up land, by forcing these ranchers to sell their land through holding water from them and basically being just greedy. So Evans, though, can still buy his way out of it if he can try anyway. So he takes on this job to help transfer this prisoner to another town to catch a train to Yuma, and he'll be paid $200, hopefully save his land. And so it results in quite the adventure for these men as they try to transport this this outlaw across a few cities over to get him onto the prison train. And that's the basic aspect of the film. There's other things in the film to talk about, but I didn't want to spoil everything at the very beginning. And first off, this is directed by James Mangold, who directed Walk the Line and Logan and The Wolverine. He's in Ford vs. Ferrari, which also starred Christian Bale. And
good movie.
Yeah.
And Mangold is, he's a very good director that sometimes doesn't get enough credit. And I was texting you guys, I think my only beef with Mangold sometimes maybe he doesn't hire the best cinematographer. Sometimes his shots are set up a little bit. Not that you can't tell what's going on, but they're just kind of he doesn't let scenes breathe, so to speak, sometimes. You know, does that make sense? But overall, he's just a really good director and sometimes doesn't get enough credit. And I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what he's going to do with Indiana Jones. But we're talking about this film right now. I actually saw this in theaters. I took my mom to see this. I remember going to see it with her. And she really liked this movie a lot. And, Christian Bale was coming off the success of Batman Begins and starting to become a big star. And Russell Crowe had already won Oscars at this point, was a star. So right away, you have a really good cast in this movie and a really good supporting cast with a lot of fairly unknown actors at the time that are now known. So this came together to be quite a surprisingly well-done remake in Western. What are your guys' initial thoughts on it? Well, Long, you had never seen
it. Yeah, I was going to wait for Long. I
forgot about that.
For me?
Yeah.
Well, this is like the first time in a long time where I didn't have to watch a movie on the day of recording or the day before recording. I actually watched it like on Monday, which I'm really proud of.
Nice.
I watched it really early in the week just because I needed to freaking settle down from setting up my fish tank, which I did, by the way. I didn't mention that in the beginning of the show, huh? But anyways, I needed to relax, and I started watching 3:10 to Yuma, and I thought it was a really good movie. Very good movie. Hated the ending.
I hate the ending of this film, too. We'll talk about that more later.
Hated the ending, but then again, you know, I was, like, not surprised. It was James Mangold directing, after all. And It's, let's see. You really got to know Christian Bale's character, as well as Russell Crowe. Russell Crowe is definitely an enigma throughout the movie. I mean, you know his intentions are that he just, you know...
He's an evil dude.
Yeah. He's an evil dude. Or is he, kind of? I mean, he had no problem killing people.
No.
That wrongs him. Especially that one annoying deputy who was taunting him.
You're gonna hate me?
You know.
In the morning.
That actor is always an asshole in anything he's in.
Yeah.
I don't even know his fucking name, but he's always an asshole.
Yeah. So I was just clapping and laughing, so happy that he died.
By fork.
So by fork, no less.
Yeah.
And anyways, besides that scene, no, I thought both actors carried the movie very well. At first I didn't like the 14-year-old son.
He grows on you throughout the film, yeah.
Yeah, he does. Once he knew how serious things got when he was sneaking off with his dad, that's when he started to mature a little.
Mm-hmm.
So, little by little. And again, Ben Foster. Yeah, he was a stone cold killer in this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and yeah, compared to Hell or High Water, who his character is so much more impulsive.
Yes,
in that movie,
I watched Hell or High Water. I forgot to mention that.
Oh yeah, let's pause this a little bit. Quick grade, Matt. How would you score Hell or High Water?
A, man, it's an A.
Yeah, yeah. It's
a great fucking movie.
Great movie.
Yeah,
Ben is Ben Foster's a different guy in there too.
Very different.
Mm-hmm.
But Chris Pine was excellent in that movie too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So anyways, Ben Foster was definitely a more calculated character in this one. He was not impulsive. He thought things through, and he was extremely loyal to Russell Crowe's character. And what else is? I mean, it was a great movie overall, except for the ending.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like,
I liked it.
Rewatching this, Russell Crowe plays Ben Wade with kind of a almost a step back fashion, kind of a relaxed, calculated,
understated
yeah. performance. But yet, here's a guy that shows at the end of the film, whenever he basically takes out his own crew, that he'll do whatever it takes to survive. But he also kind of has this weird, like,
he has a sense compass. Of morality. Yeah.
More sense of morality to himself and his beliefs. Like, if you earn his respect, he's going to respect you. But yet, if he doesn't know you, he'll kill you in a second. And he develops that respect throughout the film for Dan Evans. And then so the flip side of it is Ben Foster's character, Charlie Prince.
Yep.
He's this sadistic, evil, calculated gunslinger that seems to be kind of like the loose cannon of the group, but he's also focused as well. And it's kind of a different look at a gang of outlaws in the Old West, because a lot of times they are kind of
backstabbing,
kind of wild. And crazy, where Ben Wade's crew is very focused, and like you said, they're loyal to Ben Wade and what he does. And I've never seen the original, so I don't know how the group was played like that. And like they, in fact, the whole irony of is one of Charlie Prince's lines is like, "Are you some sort of posse?" And he kills them all. I hate posses. But essentially, you're in a fucking posse, dude. But Ben Foster is so good in this movie as the gunslinger, and has some really good lines in the movie too. Go ahead, Matt.
I really like the movie, and I think the person that makes this work the most is Ben Wade. I know he's kind of unorthodox, but he's respectful. Like, he's got tons of manners. He reads the Bible.
He's always fluently. thank you and pardon me and all. Yes, even though it's his evil dude, he's always being nice. It's
but weird. He's going to take what he wants. He doesn't care if your wife's married. He's going to fuck her right in front of you kind of thing. And he's trying to steal Evan's wife right in front of him. And yes. Then tells her what he would do if he was in Evan's place and how he would be a better husband, essentially. And, there's the widow bartender lady. You know, he takes her. They're just attracted to him because he's a smooth talker. He's not exactly James Bond, but hey, you wouldn't mind being this guy, maybe. He's this bad guy that you kind of root for, but he's this really good bad guy. And like Alfred Hitchcock said, the better the bad guy, the better the movie. And I think one of the reasons why this movie works is that you have a really good bad guy.
And then you have a unassuming hero in Dan Evans that really isn't trying to be a hero. He even talks about throughout the film, he got his leg shot off in the war, and he reveals at the end of the film that it was an accident that caused it. That he was no real hero. Yeah. It's just a guy who's just trying to take care of his family, and that's all he wants to do. And unfortunately, we'll talk about the ending here in just a second, but even if he gets that $200, he's not getting his land. And Evans, I think, knows that throughout the film, but he's going to try whatever he can to do things for his family, because I think if I remember, isn't there a conversation where Ben Wade tells him the Hollanders aren't going to do anything, they're not going to give you your land. I think he says something to that line.
Yeah.
He says, what are you doing here, Dan? You're not going to get your land back, but then the ending comes and, he's trying to, he gets cornered in the town. Him and Ben Wade are in a hotel room, and at first they think they have help from the marshals. They have about 15 minutes till the train comes to get Ben Wade on the train, but the marshals give in when Charlie Prince tells the entire town he'll give $200 to anybody who can shoot anybody in that room. So the whole town's grabbing guns, and he's in an impossible situation. So everyone leaves him, but here's Dan, who's not going to give up because he wants to do prove he can do something right. And despite Ben Wade trying to bribe him to give up and walk away with a lot of money, he still does it. And they exit that hotel in a almost impossible situation. And he gets him to the train at the end, throughout a massive shootout. And then the ending happens that I really hate. As he gets Russell Crowe's character onto the train, Charlie Prince shows back up, his evil, sadistic self, even though his son had helped cause a distraction to get Ben on the train. It wasn't enough, and Charlie shows up, and he just lays several bullets into Dan Evans' character, and it's just it's heartbreaking after going through all that to see him shot.
Yeah.
But there's a sense of revenge coming from a place you don't expect as Ben Wade steps down from the train. And he's very upset that this man he's earned his respect was killed in front of him. He didn't want that done. And he shoots his entire gang dead because he just doesn't
care. Like, quick.
Yeah. And that's the thing.
As alluded to earlier. Yeah.
It's alluded to. You see him kill the deputy with the fork, but you never see him really in action. And he pulls that gun and fires on all of them. And he's almost faster than Charlie Prince was, So then he accepts his fate. He gets back on the train and decides to go to prison. And the movie just ends with, his son will go on and help the family out, I guess. And I guess the investor in catching Ben Wade, I don't know what you would call that character, had promised Dan that he would make sure the family was taken care of. So it does end with some hope that the family would be taken care of. But, God, you go through this whole journey with Dan, and to see him killed, it's heartbreaking at the end of the film.
Part of it is he wants to take care of his family. He also cares about how his son and his wife thinks about him, perceive him. And yet, like you said, he tells his son, you remember that when everyone else walked away, I was, your dad was the only one that would walk Ben Wade to that train.
Yeah.
And so he wants to. Yeah, I think he knows he's going to die, or his chances of survival is probably low. But I think he just wanted to go out, as a hero to his kids, to his family. And you see this relationship forming between Ben Wade and Evans. And, you know, I think Wade, you know, obviously truly did care about Evans. You know, he shows it at the end. I guess that, I guess, you know, that what happened along the journey, you know, went a whole lot, you know, farther than what we thought, you know, when we revealed that, the ending, you know, how he treats Charlie, you know, just cast him aside, his right-hand man. That's one thing that's consistent with the classic film, you know, the original 1957 film. But I think they focus more on that in that film, cause you just, you know, they didn't have the action scenes you have in this one, but yeah, you know, Father of the Year right there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, watching this, I was thinking, though, you know, they were trying to cast Cruz and Eric Bana, and I think they, you know, I could see them working in these roles, too, you know. The only thing about Cruz is I don't think he would have played it as subtle as Russell Crowe did. Cruz probably would have tried to have more of that smirk going, more of a bit of an attitude as a villain than yeah. Crowe did.
But, pretty boy villain or something.
I could easily see Bana fitting in the Dan Evans role. You know, him and... Mm-hmm. They'll both have a similar charisma to them. And
dude, I miss Eric Bana, man.
Yeah, I wish he would.
I hear he's a very versatile actor.
And it's interesting just the movie you actually got, but Crowe and Bale are fantastic in this too.
Mm-hmm. And Peter Fonda, you know, yeah. Nice little side character.
Almost going to be Kris Kristofferson, but he was, I guess, busy, so he couldn't get him. He was either on tour or something.
Mm-hmm.
But that was their original choice, was Kris Kristofferson to play that role. But Peter Fonda's in it, and Peter Fonda's always excellent in anything he's in.
Mm-hmm. I like some of his lines. He's like, "I'm Charlie Prince. You heard of me?" He's like, "I heard of Charlie Princess."
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Every time I laugh really hard, it irritates my throat.
One thing, though, like going back to Ben Foster, he just looks like he's having a lot of fun playing a bad guy in this movie.
Like he does. Just
plays the part. You notice he's the only cowboy wearing like white clothes. He doesn't have like dark clothes, and he's just more. And you can just tell the way he's walking around the film. He's like he just absolutely owns it, and he's great in the movie. And he's such an underrated actor that. You know, he's only 41, so he still can have a huge career ahead of him. He just feels like one of those guys that if he just gets the right roles, man, he could be a much bigger star than he is, you know. Because he's done some good stuff. We just talked about Hell or High Water. Even that really bad, Jason Statham has done some bad movies, but he did a remake of the Charlie Bronson film, The Mechanic, and Ben Foster's in that. Foster's actually really good in the movie, despite the movie being trash, you know. But, you know, he's just a good underrated actor.
Yeah, there's also something of note, too, that this was Peter Fonda's final role, film role as well.
Oh, yeah.
Peter Fonda, who peaked from Easy Rider.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And Yulee's Gold, maybe. He won an Oscar for that movie.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, yeah, Peter Fonda.
Man. And he was the devil in Ghost Rider. We covered on our Patreon last year.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Huh. Yeah. But man, just a good Western. Yeah. I've talked about this before the show. I still enjoy the Western genre quite a bit. And Hollywood doesn't do them as many as they used to, cause there's so many back in the heyday, but every few years, it seems like there's one that comes along that's just really well done, and this is one of those. You know, there's been some good ones in the last 10-15 years, modern Westerns, I hope Hollywood doesn't give up on Westerns and continues to make them, because I still enjoy the genre quite a bit. And this one I like. I give this a pretty solid A. I think it's a well done film. I wish the ending was a little happier, but overall, just well acted. Well shot film with some good performances and a good story.
I agree. A.
Yep. A minus because of the ending.
Fair enough.
Fair. Yep.
And I always enjoy when we do a movie that one of us hasn't seen before to get their reactions, or, you know, it's always fun to to get those first time watches.
Yeah, and it's funny too because I've owned the movie on Blu-ray for almost 10 years, and really? I've never watched it. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, I probably could go through my Blu-rays. There's a couple things over there that I've never actually took out and watched. It happens, you know.
Yeah.
So with this ending being kind of a unexpected, somewhat sad ending, we decided to base our top five around that. Well, I'm going to rephrase that. Long decided to base the top five around that and told me and Matt this is what you are doing, fuckers, and I don't care. Is top five hero deaths in films. Who wants to start?
Long. I'll start since I was the one that was pushy about it.
Okay.
Well, I hate doing things at the last minute. I like to find out at least the night before. Well,
I was working on it. I said I had to make a phone call. Give me a few minutes. So you didn't even give me a few minutes.
Yeah. And Matt already agreed to it, so I was like,
yeah,
you got it. So, all right. So my number five is somewhat of a deep cut, but it's from the 1970s movie Midway, and it was the death of Charlton Heston's character during the Battle of Midway. And Charlton Heston is basically spent all movie trying to protect his son, and he ends up dying in the process. And
yeah, that's probably the best part of it's the sad part, but probably the best part of the movie because the rest of that movie is okay. It's not a great
movie. Yeah.
But yeah.
No. Yeah. So that's my number five.
I'll go next. Number five for me, I've got William Wallace, Braveheart.
Freedom!
But more manly.
Well, he's being gutted alive.
Yeah, dude. Just taking out his innards.
Ugh. Yeah.
I had that as my honorable mention. So, yeah. One of my favorite all-time movies. But I went with this one instead. It's not really necessarily a sad or tragic ending, but very unexpected, unless you had seen the original Hong Kong film. But that is when Leonardo gets shot in The Departed. It's just like, oh shit, you go through this whole 2.5 hour movie and then all of a sudden just the elevator door opens and bam, you're like, I remember watching the theaters and the whole theater just gasped, like, oh my God, you know, and it's just shocking because you don't see it coming at all. And so it's a pretty, you know, to go through this whole film with this guy and then that just happens. It's completely unexpected. Spoiler if anybody had not seen The Departed. But we're going to cover that film in April, so we'll talk more about it later.
Yeah, number four for me is Matrix Revolutions, The Death of Neo. And kind of in hand, Trinity as well. Basically, three movies watching Neo grow as the one cheat code, the one hack.
The one hack.
Yeah, and Death of Neo, Matrix Revolutions. That's my number four.
Number four for me, Long. I've got Spock from The Wrath of Khan. Spock's death.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was good. I mean, the first thing he does is straighten out his jacket and say, "Is the crew okay?" And he knows he's dying, so he's, you know, clearly shows his strength of character there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At number four, we talked about this. Mangold likes to kill characters. And I got to go with Logan, man. I after 20 years of watching Hugh Jackman play Wolverine and to see it end with him protecting the future of mutant kind, it was and holding his daughter's hand, it was quite touching, even for, you know, it was sad to see him go from not just the character, but see Hugh leave the role as well, you know, until we get another Wolverine. Mm-hmm. It's always going to be Wolverine to me, so we'll see.
My number three is The Departed, Leo DiCaprio's death. It almost came out of nowhere, all these shootings happening at the end of the movie. I didn't expect the hero to die after going through all that trouble trying to stay alive, and he ends up getting killed anyways.
Is there an echo? That was fun. I was fucking with you, Long.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've got I've got Logan's death, you know, heralded a little higher. So my number three is Logan's death. You know, I think, you know, it was just sad, you know, at the time you're just like, man, 17 years of him playing Logan and it's over, you know, man, you know, wish he would come back for another film, you know, say it ain't so. But Logan, number three for me.
And number three, I have a movie that we've covered on the show. And when I was a kid, this deeply affected me. And that's no lie. It's The Death of Artax and The Neverending Story. Man, it's like,
you're a kid.
That it is sad as hell. You know, as Atreyu tries to save his beloved horse. And it still hurts to watch that scene even today.
That's true. Man, I almost forgot about that.
My number two is from Bruce Lee's classic martial arts movie, The Chinese Connection. In the U.S., that's what it's called. The death of his character at the very end of the movie, where cops are coming to arrest his character for murdering a whole dojo of Japanese patriots. And he comes out and does a freeze frame jump kick towards, you know, the crowd of policemen who are there to, you hear gunfire at the end. Mm-hmm. So that was one of the saddest deaths for me. Chinese Connection as a kid.
Good one.
Bruce Lee's death.
I know you predicted this as my number one, but it's my number two. And that is the K-800 death.
I bet I can predict your number one then.
Probably. But yeah, I mean, just whenever
I'm going to bet your number one is my number two. I'm just going to go out and say that.
He, you know, it's just at that point, you know, even my son, when my Jake, when he first saw Terminator, he cried whenever Arnold had to die. And he said, "I know now why you cry, for it is something that I could never do." And my son was like, "It's sad because now he understands. He knows why he cries." And I was like, I'm proud of you, son. I was like, this is like the manliest thing you can do is cry over Arnold dying. I said, so I knew he was going to turn out okay.
God help.
That's my number two.
My number two is Tony Stark in Endgame last year. I'm betting that's probably Matt's number one, just because, you know, I just know Matt. But after a 10-year journey through all these films and to see Tony go on screen, you know, I walked into Endgame knowing that somebody was probably going to die. You know, I mean, I think we all did. And I was like, oh, it's not going to affect me. But then when that scene hits, you're like, God damn it, this sucks. And
yeah.
So, yeah, Tony Stark in Endgame, man, last year was pretty hard to hard to handle.
Pretty good heroic death. Yeah.
Yeah.
My number one is Godzilla's death in Godzilla versus Destroyer. Hits me right here watching that death scene every time. Every time. That and the shooting of Old Yeller was pretty high up there, too.
So, was Old Yeller a killer, a hero, though?
Yeah, well, he's the title character, Old Yeller. You know? He shoot that dog because he had rabies. Come on. Who wouldn't cry over that? That's a sad hero's death. And then Godzilla dying. Yeah. Anyways, that's my number one.
You were right, Mark. Number one for me is Endgame.
Most predictable person I know, Matt.
Yeah, I mean, how do you top that? I mean, you know, it just there's obviously
Godzilla's death. Top it. That tops it every time for me.
Even my number one is probably going to top it. But
yeah, just sacrifice himself, you know.
Yeah. All right.
My number one
drum roll. is
Captain Miller in Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, I mean, nice.
Even 20 years later, I cry watching that end of that film every time. It's just
because a so punk ass translator can't do shit.
Just heartbreaking for this journey you go on with these men, and that, you know, he gives his life to save another young man that, you know, because his brothers were killed. And, I still think it's one of the greatest films of the last, you know, half, you know, century of films or whatever. You know, I think it still bugs me to this day that it didn't win Best Picture, and it's always going to bug me. That's just how I feel about that film. Saving Private Ryan just came out at the right time. We did this with Rob on the podcast, and Saving Private Ryan just came out. You know, 1998. I'm about 20 years old. I'm starting to really understand film and what film is all about, and I think it's probably the first truly, really mature film that I watched and had an effect on me. And Captain Miller's death is always going to have an effect on me every time I watch that movie. So, just an important film to me in a different way than Star Wars or Indiana Jones is, if that makes sense. You know, because I think you can have I think you can have movies that are important to you in different eras depending on your age.
So, oh yeah,
but yeah. Good top fives. There's lots of movies you can pick from doing a list like that with hero deaths. It was pretty easy to put together. So I guess I'll give you credit, Long. It wasn't that bad of a top five, even though I was messing with you saying it was lame.
Yeah.
You know I'm going to troll. I'm always going to fucking troll, man. If I don't troll, if Mark's not trolling you, Mark must be in a bad mood or something's wrong. Y'all know that about me. Let's do a little bit of news. There's not a whole lot. It's kind of a slow week. I mean, almost a rumor started that Disney was considering letting go of Kathleen Kennedy. Of course, it got all the Star Wars haters going again, but Disney CEOs and Lucasfilm executives came out and threw their support behind her and said, no, she's not going anywhere. And my whole thing is, why would she go anywhere? Since Disney has bought Star Wars, it's made its money back and then some. Everything she's done other than Solo, and Solo came out at a bad time because of the backlash of The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
Everything she's done has been absolute gold. I mean, she has made that company billions of fucking dollars. Why would you fire her? You know? I mean, she was handpicked by George himself to run the company. It's just ridiculous that this even comes up every now and then. I mean, The Mandalorian's a huge success. The Cara Dune situation of that character has been kind of a flipping back and forth between people, but it is what it is. You know, I mean, she's done nothing but make money for that company, and I think Kathleen Kennedy has done a really great job since she took over. That's my personal thoughts. Whether you like the sequels or not, I think they've been very successful. So I hope she keeps bringing more Star Wars stuff to us. Other than that, man, a little bit of comic book news, some Batman comic news. The animated series, of course, is one of the most popular animated series of all time. And last year they did a digital series called Batman, The Adventure Continues. They're going to do a volume 2 of that where they're going to introduce the Court of Owls and some other newer Batman elements into animated series style continuity. And along with that, DC announced digital comics of Batman 89 and Superman 78, where they're going to continue the stories in the continuity of the 89 Batman film and the 78 Superman film. So I might check those out. That could be interesting. Could get a Billy D. Williams style Two-Face in there, and some other things. So it could be kind of cool.
That would be cool.
Christopher Reeve drawn Superman stories. So we'll see. As a Batman fan.
Michelle Pfeiffer as Catwoman.
Yes. Yeah, but as a Batman fan, I'm definitely interested in checking that out. Will we get Wayans as Robin? Payman Wayans.
That would be cool.
Remember, that was originally, if Tim Burton was going to make Batman 3, that they were going to have Damon Wayans play Robin. In fact, a little known fact, the Robin figure that was released with the Batman Returns line back in 92, people were like, why is there a Robin figure? Well, there were storyboards for him. Of course, they took him out of the film. The reason Robin has this afro hairstyle on that action figure, it's because they modeled it originally after Damon Wayans because they thought he was going to play Robin. So a little known, unknown fact as to why the 92 Batman Returns figure has a fro. But true story. So, and now you know, knowing it's half the battle.
Go Joe.
Well, before we get out of here, let's preview next week's film. An action-packed, exciting, very 90s film, but a very good, fun action movie starring Nicolas Cage and Sean Connery and directed by, I know he's not everyone's favorite director to talk about, but this is good Michael Bay back when he was, before he was making Transformers movies. This is arguably his best action film. And we're going to talk The Rock on next week's show.
following is a state secret, gentlemen. Disclose it to any party and you will be subject to prosecution. His name is John Mason, British national, incarcerated on Alcatraz in 1962, escaped in 63. There's no identity in the United States or Great Britain. He does not exist.
Secrets have a way of coming back to haunt you.
There's a hostage situation on Alcatraz.
Hostage?
81 tourists. The Rock's a tourist attraction.
The one you train to defend you becomes your greatest threat.
A battery of VX gas rockets is presently deployed to deliver a highly lethal strike on the population of the San Francisco Bay Area.
And the one you abandon becomes your only hope.
You go talk to him.
Me?
Yeah.
Hiya. I'm an agent with the FBI. I'm Stanley Goodspeed.
But of course you are.
At least he got his name right.
Now, all that stands between a city and a disaster.
The power of this chemical is way beyond anything you can imagine.
That's why you're coming with us.
Is a man who's never seen combat.
You're a chemical freak. I'm a chemical super freak, actually.
And another who's been out of action for 30 years.
Show us on the blueprints.
I can't. My blueprint was in my head.
Fortunately, some things you never forget.
But don't worry, it'll all come back to me.
From Don Simpson and Jerry Bruckheimer, the producers of Top Gun and Crimson Tide, and Michael Bay, the director of Bad Boys.
Welcome to The Rock.
We got visitors.
Sean Connery.
You sure you're ready for this?
I'll do my best.
Your best? Losers always whine about their best.
Yeah.
Nicolas Cage.
Listen, I'm just a biochemist. I drive a Volvo. A beige one. So what do you say you cut me some friggin' slack?
Ed Harris.
Fire.
This summer, get ready to rock.
May, I have a confession to make. I saw The Rock 3 times in theaters.
Wow.
Wow.
I saw it like opening night, then I think my brother wanted to go see it, and I saw it with him, and I think I had another friend that wanted to go see it, and somehow I saw it. Not only did I see it 3 times, I saw it 3 times like in the first week it came out. And it's just one of those things, it sticks to your mind because you're like, man, why did I see this film 3 times in a week? But it's a good action film. Also starring Ed Harris and a lot of other, there's quite a few actors in this film. Michael Biehn, he was always a favorite of ours. He's in this film too. So I haven't watched it in quite a while. I'm kind of looking forward to watching it again and see it holds up, you know. Being a 1996, I think, when it came out. So,
yeah.
And of course, the great Sean Connery's in it too, and we'll talk about more next week. But I think The Rock works so well because of Sean Connery. It's not your boy Nick Cage, Matt. It's because of Sean Connery. So that should be fun. So that's on next week's show. But as always, thank you for listening. And the RebelRadioPodcast.com, of course, is where you can find everything. And until next week, this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
This is Long, the posse leader.
I don't like posses. Until next week, remember, as always, just go there.
Just go there and do it.
Do it.